Is Nickelodeon harboring criminal pedophiles? Is Hollywood a cesspool of child molesters? What does this say about us as a society? Are we worshiping celebrities to the point that parents are exposing their own children to vampire pedos in exchange for fame and fortune? Join me today as we explore the Quiet On Set documentary and try to shed light on a dark topic to see if there's anything we can clear up from these controversial claims set forth about Nickelodeon and child celebrities. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Join me as we dive deep into Quiet On Set. Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt, and today we're talking about morbidly what seems like the most popular topic, pedos in the entertainment industry. We're going to talk about Nickelodeon, Quiet On Set, the docuseries everyone's talking about. I'm going to cover every claim made in this documentary, all right? Well, not everyone, but most of them. Because my whole thing was, when I watched this, my mind was all over. You know how documentaries are? They have an angle and an agenda. And by the time you get done, if you don't actively think about it and question things, you're going to go down the path of whatever it is you feel, okay? And look, there's no twist here. I'm not going to be like, well, it turns out these guys are okay and Nickelodeon is a great place to work for kids. Like, no, like, there's some bad things going on here. But we're going to get into it today. I'm going to detail all the things. We're going to clarify. We're going to talk about all these people that everyone's talking about. Dan Schneider, Ariana Grande, Amanda Bynes, Drake Bell, Jason Handy, Brian Peck, Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh my gosh. How dare we use Leonardo DiCaprio's name in such a dark subject. But we're going to cover the Dan Schneider response video that he posted on YouTube, which is absolutely wild. We're going to look at one of the questions I have is about Brian Peck. Why did this guy have such pull in Hollywood? He was just a voice actor, a voice coach or something. And what? Everyone comes out of the woodworks to defend him when he's convicted guilty of doing some of this stuff? As a dialogue coach, that doesn't make any sense. That tells me there's a higher conspiracy here, okay? But anyway, we're gonna cover all that. And this is going to be part one. I'm going to have a part two following up. I'm not sure when. Part one is going to cover the whole docuseries Quiet On Set. I'm looking through my notes, man. This is going to be a long one. Yeah, part two is we're going to go deeper into some of the side conspiracies of the Nickelodeon stuff and these celebrities and these stars, some of the claims that are not found on the docuseries. So yeah, get ready for that. So be sure to be subscribed to the show, like and subscribe, you know the deal. Stuff like for instance, have you seen the shape of Epstein Island? People are saying that it's the same shape of the Nickelodeon splat. Seems kind of odd. All right. Now, without further ado, let's just get into it because I want to unpack the whole Quiet On Set docuseries. This, I'm going to play clips throughout. This is the first one. The idea is that Dan Schneider, he's the subject of the whole first episode. There's four episodes. And Dan Schneider, he was the golden boy of Nickelodeon, launching tons of careers. He shaped children's programming for 20 years. Take a listen.
For decades, Dan seemed like he was untouchable. But around 2017, the internet videos around Dan really started gaining momentum.
He made them do things that were very weird.
There are all these setups that reference porn, like squirting goo on Jamie Lynn's face when she's just 13 years old.
Feel these kids' feet. Wow, they're really soft.
People were looking back at old scenes and saying, Dan Schneider is obsessed with feet. Check this out.
It's all very gross and
impossible to escape children's feet.
Dan Schneider.
Absolutely disgusting.
He's a grown-ass man. What the f*** are you doing?
There's one video of Ariana Grande making a joke about a potato.
Sometimes I wonder if you can get juice from a potato.
Did that air on Nickelodeon?
Come on! Give up the juice!
Yikes.
I'm thirsty!
In another video, Ariana's pouring water on herself in what seems like a very sexual manner. And people started saying, this feels inappropriate for children.
looking at Dan Schneider's stars, some of them became extremely famous. Some of them really struggled publicly.
After her arrest last week.
Now, some of them are starting to speak out about what happened when they were on his sets.
I worked with an incredibly emotionally abusive producer.
I did not feel safe around Dan Schneider while I was working at Nickelodeon.
All of this information has made us wonder what was happening behind the scenes.
As a reporter and insider, I wanted to investigate further.
I've been waiting for someone to question the climate. It's been a long time.
So to recap, the idea is that Dan Schneider, you know, he, around 2017, around the Me Too movement, he started getting, there started to become allegations of, and look, I'm going to use all the terms here, all right? If you're sensitive to it, I'm very sorry. We're going to use a lot of these terms. All right. You know the terms I'm talking about, the ones that no one says on social media. I might be careful about certain ways. I don't know. Who knows? I'm always, you know, you get censored a couple times in your life, and boy, oh boy, does it stick with you. I might use safer words. I don't know. Let me think about it on the fly. But anyways, there was allegations of him posting, porn on these shows, on these Nickelodeon kids shows. All right. They play clips of, you know, Goose shooting on Jamie Lynn Spears' face when she was 13. They're playing clips of these characters caressing feet on the show. They're playing Ariana Grande clips. And you'll notice I'm not doing the voice because I'm trying to be more, I've got a pretty awful sense of humor. I'm a pretty dark person, but I will try to be respectful here, you know, because actually I watched this thing and I thought, man, I feel bad for Ariana Grande. I'm always picking on her, making the little. No, Ariana Grande voice, and I'm not going to do that this time. I know I just did it, but I'm not going to do it again. I actually feel bad for her now. So, but they play clips of Ariana Grande juicing a potato, which is basically, I mean, it looks like clutching a male phallus. There's feet. She's putting feet in her mouth, again, with the feet stuff. She's pouring water on herself in what they're saying is a very sexual manner on the bed. I've got my own opinions about all this stuff, but then they talk about, what's the guy from SNL? What's his name? He was on Kellen Thompson? Keenan Thompson. Is that his name? Yeah, Keenan Thompson. Who I love. I think he's hilarious. I guess he was on Nickelodeon. I'm too old for all this stuff. I watched Double Dare in the 80s, 90s, and I watched You Can't Do That on Television. If you heard me and Josie did a very casual conversation about all this, it was almost 3 hours on breaking social norms, and we talked about growing up watching Nickelodeon and my dad eat the characters on You Can't Do That on Television. The one kid talked back to the parent, and my dad heard it and he was like, "Hell no!" He turned that off. He's like, "You're not watching that trash." Oh man, parenting was different in the 80s, wasn't it? Now people are taking these kids to, like Nickelodeon Cruise or whatever they do. Anyway. The Kenan Thompson, Amanda Bynes, all these big celebrities, Ariana Grande, they all grew up with this Dan Schneider guy, okay? And it's interesting because Mark Summers from Double Dare, I know who he is, he was watching some of these clips. He goes, "Did they air that on Nickelodeon?" Which I was like, ugh, not good. Because here's the thing. Some of this stuff, and I'll probably say this again towards the end, on this show, on the part one, they talk about Nickelodeon, and they show a lot of clips of people getting slimed, right? And I, as a child, loved that on Double Dare. I thought it was hilarious. I don't know why. You know, I was a stupid kid. But the idea of slime and stuff and gooey stuff and all that, like, that's just kind of kid humor, I think, right? I don't have kids, so I don't know. But I remember watching it as a kid, and I enjoyed that. Like, gross stuff, boogers, snot, whatever. And in this whole series, they keep going back to that same well again. They're saying, "You see this goo and this slime? Look, it's shooting her in the face. It's a cum shot." And I'm like, geez, maybe to the sick weirdos, right? Maybe to pedos that watch this for that kind of thing. Maybe, right? Kids are not looking at it that way. They don't even know what that means. Your kids just like gross stuff. You know what I mean? But you could make the argument that this is, there's two levels going on here. Dan Schneider is a pedo weirdo. That's the kind of the claim they're trying to make without saying it out loud. And kids like this stuff. Like, maybe both of those things are true. Because Dan Schneider does seem like a weirdo. But they don't do a good job at convicting him of doing any stuff with the kids. They say, oh, he's a weirdo. He's always filming stuff with feet and goo flinging on people's faces. And Ariana Grande's got water on her chest. And I'm like, bro, like, if the first thing you're thinking about is sexual thoughts, like, that says you got something wrong with you, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's a very conflicting documentary. So, I'm hesitant to condemn this guy. I mean, he does plenty of stuff worth condemning, trust me, when we get into it. But I'm just saying, if they're trying to convince me that this guy is sexually abusing children, I don't know, man. That's got to be a pretty high bar of evidence for me to... I mean, that's a pretty bold claim, right? They don't ever come out and say that. They just are like, oh, this guy's an awful person. Let me keep going. We'll walk through the documentary. Sorry, I'm getting on the soapbox already. They talk about Dan Schneider. He grew up in Memphis. He was on Head of the Class, that show from the 80s. I think John Travolta was on that, wasn't he? Was John Travolta on Head of the Class? Head of the Class TV cast. All right, let's see. I thought it was John Travolta. Maybe it wasn't. Was John? Maybe he was. Oh, I'm thinking of Welcome Back, Kotter. My bad. Okay. So anyway, he was on Head of the Class. I watched that as a kid. And the but John Travolta comes up later, by the way, when we talk about, in part two, we're gonna talk about Amanda Bynes' secret Twitter account. And she calls out John Travolta. But he was on Head of the Class, which, by the way, the other guy on that show, he would later become the president of Nickelodeon, or the CEO or something like that, which they don't mention. They also don't mention that Dan Schneider was in Better Off Dead. He was, I think his name was Randy. Randy! Remember Better Off Dead, where they take in the French exchange student, and Randy or Dan Schneider, he's trying to hook up with her, you know? French fries! Remember the whole French? Anyway. Point being, Dan Schneider, he gets casted as the quote-unquote fat kid throughout all these shows, and it kind of upsets him. And this is where, and now he has to prove himself everywhere and be sort of mean to people, that's me pathologizing and psychoanalyzing the guy. I call it nerd anger, right? He was a nerd. He got picked on for being overweight. And, you know, everyone wants to be accepted, right? That's why, like, I'm okay with a lot of the, not a lot of it, but some of the woke stuff out there, of embracing diversity, because we need to. Otherwise, you're going to make angry nerds out there, right? Right? I mean, if there's an overweight person, you shouldn't bully them and call them a big fatso, right? I mean, I guess there's also a reality where, like, you got to try to stay healthy, you know? But I don't know. All I'm saying is, what happens when you make outcasts in society, they get theirs in a different way. Like Charles Manson, right? He had all kinds of horrific abuse growing up, and it shaped him to be sort of evil, right? Just like Dan Schneider, probably. I think there was nerd anger there. So he's given the opportunity to write a pilot for a show, a sketch comedy show on Nickelodeon called All That. They interview a bunch of the stars from All That. Dan's creating all these, you know, fun sets, and he's joking around. He's doing a lot of self-deprecating jokes. And the suggestion that they keep laying in here is that there's a power imbalance, that the kids have got to work these long hours, and they are the breadwinners, and everyone wanted to stay on Dan's good side because he had way too much power. Seems that way, right? And the implication that they kind of slide in there is that he's grooming these kids. And this is where I have beef with this documentary, in a way. I don't say beef, that makes it sound bigger than it is. But my issue is that they're blurring accusations together. It's like, okay, I think Dan's a mean guy. He was awful to work for. He sexually harassed a lot of people. He was a little pervy, a lot pervy. And everyone had complaints about this. And it's like, well, on the one hand, I think, welcome to work. You know what I mean? I've worked with a million terrible supervisors who were inappropriate and sexually harassed women. You know what I mean? Is it any better that they're doing it to kids? No, it's all terrible. All of it's bad. But I wouldn't call those bad supervisors pedos either. I don't know. We'll put a pin in it. The implication is that he's grooming kids, though. That's what they slide in here. A woman named Katrina Johnson said, well, Dan whispered in my ear, I chose you. And someone else on the set said Katrina was putting on too much weight and she can't be the fat one, is what they said. And these are all traumatizing things. And she hit puberty and they were like, okay, now you really got to go. And they replaced her with Amanda Bynes. Now, one guy was wearing leotards as a boy and he didn't like that. He said about how they called him Nose Boy and they put these noses on his costume that he said looked like penises. And they did. They look like penises. And he sneezes and snot comes out and sprays all over this other girl. And again, they say that these are sort of covert cum shot jokes, which is obviously very inappropriate to have children do, if that's the case. So then they talk about Amanda Bynes, because she gets on the scene. She's a big to-do. Her dad put a lot of pressure on her. He helped craft her career along with Dan Schneider. They make the Amanda Bynes show that breaks out. Dan is now a god amongst Nickelodeon. He is given this new title or position of some kind of creative, whatever. They open up a lot of doors for him. And the female writers who were on that show detail how abusive he was as a, I don't know, supervisor, whatever. I don't know if supervisor is the right term, but you know what I mean. He was above them in a way, in the pecking order. And they talked about how Hollywood in the 90s didn't have a whole lot of females working there, and there was these two women were hired to share one salary as writers on the Amanda Bynes show. But they said, look, it was a dream job. I kind of had to take it. I'll take it for half pay, I guess. And, you know, that's the bummer about Hollywood or jobs like that. It's like being a cop, you know, like, I don't think it's a fun job, but some people do. They get a lot of adrenaline and a lot of authority out of it, and it makes them feel good, and their job's always interesting. That's a fact. They're certainly not bored at work like I am sometimes. So you end up trading off. You might not make as much money. And I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm saying, like, it was Jenny and Christy. They had to split one salary. Like, that's insane. But and when you listen to Dan's rebuke of this claim, he, on his YouTube video, which is nuts, he says that this is very standard practice in Hollywood. I don't know. I'm coming at you from the angle of, it's a documentary. They're definitely trying to portray this guy as a monster. And he is. I do think he is. I want to make sure we reiterate that many times. But you know me, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I don't trust anybody, right? I'm paranoid, and we should all not trust anybody with anything all the time. That's all I'm saying. So Jenny and Christy are talking about how they had to split a salary, and Dan would refer to them as the girls. And he was, again, doing this weird power dynamic where he would make sexual jokes and he would say, well, do you mind that? And the girls would feel obliged to say, no, it's fine. Because these guys don't understand the authority they hold. Well, they do. They abuse it, right? He should just be a good guy and know. It's like, you know, Louis C.K. He's one of my favorite comics ever. He's one of the best. And he was in hot water because he got canceled, I guess, is what you'd say. Because he had two other female comics, and he was, you know, the biggest comic in the world at the time. And he pulled his wiener out and was playing with himself in front of these girls. And he thought, well, I mean, these girls don't mind this. I'm the hottest comic there is. And they didn't like it. You know, there was no consent there. And these guys have to understand that when you're in a powerful position, you have to go out of your way to make sure the other people are comfortable, because they don't want to step on your toes because you have too much power. Like, you can get rid of them or fire them or whatever, you know? Well, on this Amanda Bynes show, Dan, to add to the sort of weird, pervy stuff that's inappropriate for children's programming, Dan creates a character named Penelope Taint. Take a listen.
Dan ran the writer's room. He was there anytime we were doing any work. And he was very playful. We would laugh and joke around, and being dirty was part of the silliness.
Hello, citizens. My name is Penelope Taint.
So, Penelope Taint is a character that Dan created.
My name is Penelope Taint.
Yeah, I know. He came up with the name Penelope Taint. The taint is the part of the body that's between the penis and the anus. Is that skin there? That's the taint. And Dan had said to us in the writer's room, don't tell what this word really means. He wanted us to keep that a secret.
I remember someone from Nickelodeon sitting with us and saying like, oh, does this mean, you know, this dirty thing? And Dan was like, no, why would you think that's like tainted, like you've tainted something? And they were like, okay. Man, that is power. That is power, that you can just say you want something and it's done. That's what I thought.
So it got on the show, and it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, like, yeah, it's a young girl.
So they talk about how inappropriate that is, because a taint is, and I'm surprised they didn't use the right terminology to describe what a taint was, because I've always heard it described as taint your balls, taint your ass. It's in between the two, right? And they talk about how crazy that was to name a child, a girl, after a taint, like a joke. And they talk about how there was all kinds of dirtiness going on behind the scenes. And Dan straight up told the girls to keep this a secret, apparently. And when the higher-ups questioned him on it and said, why do you have a girl with the name Taint? He explained it off as saying, oh, no, it's like to be tainted. And, you know, I don't know. Everyone's saying this Schneider guy thought all these weird, pervy jokes were funny, which is what you heard a lot about from, like, Disney. Remember Disney? Supposedly they would have penises on the artwork, or the word sex in Lion King. You just think, why are you guys doing this? Let kids be kids, and you don't need to, I don't know, what are they trying to do? Trying to sexualize these kids. Dan would make these writers do all kinds of degrading things, like screaming out words, slut. He paid Christy $300 to eat 2 pints of ice cream, and she threw up. But then he never paid her on the, it was like a dare, I guess. But again, my issue is, okay, so he's a horrible supervisor, but does that make him a pedo? I don't think so, right? You could be a horrible supervisor and not mess with kids. But then they start blurring the lines a little more, and they're like, yeah, but then he put all these weird sexual jokes on the show, made these kids partake in these weird sexual jokes. And yeah, some of them are overtly, clearly inappropriate. Some of them not. And that's my beef with the documentary, is to say, you need to come with the like nothing but the damning hits, because when you start throwing these sort of, I don't know, kind of things in there, it makes me question if you're doing a witch hunt, right? But again, to reiterate, yeah, Dan Schneider's a scumbag, and he probably was messing with kids. Allegedly, maybe, from what I'm seeing on the documentary. So Amanda Bynes, she becomes an A-list star. She's on all these talk shows. They talked to some other people on the Amanda show, Raquel Lee. And Raquel felt like Amanda and Drake Bell were closer to Dan than she was, so they got more roles. They show a clip of Amanda hugging. Oh, no, they saw, people say they saw Amanda Bynes hugging and giving neck massages to Dan. Completely inappropriate. Then they did a hot tub scene. She's in a bathing suit and he's in full clothes, and they're making a joke about how he runs the show. Again, the idea is that he's grooming her. Dan calls Jenny, the writer, and asks if she's conspiring against the company because she reported that she wasn't getting a full salary. Again, intimidation. Dan was allegedly showing the writer's porno on his computer, asking Jenny to massage him. And she said, yeah, he would always say it as a joke, but he wasn't really like he would laugh when he said it, but we all knew it was real. It wasn't a joke. So they felt pressured into doing it. And Christy was writing. Dan told her, this is the one of the worst ones for these writers, told her it would be funny if she bent over the table and relayed the writing, the story that she was writing, acting that she was being sodomized at the same time. And she gets really uncomfortable about it. And she did. Again, like, these guys don't understand that there's, when you hold a position of power, you have to be doubly sure that you're not abusing the power or making people uncomfortable. Like, that's the, you know, they say heavy is the head that wears the crown. That's some real talk. You know, when you're I was a leader in my military basic training unit, and you got the worst end of the stick. When we would go eat, I'd be the last one to eat in the chow hall, and I was the first one up because the drill instructor would be on you, because you had to get everybody in there and get them all seated, and they would just take their time eating or whatever. I'd be the last one to get my tray. I'd sit down. I'd eat, blah, 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 like seconds. I remember I started buying scrambled eggs because I could inhale those things, and the drill instructor would watch you. He'd give you maybe 10 seconds. Like, okay, get up. Go get your people out of here. And, you know, you have to lead by example is what I'm saying. There's a reason leadership makes more money. It's because they're supposed to be dealing with more situational awareness. And this guy's a bozo, and he wasn't able to do that. Weak. That's a weak man. All right. But these girls, they kept getting the idea that they kept having to go along with these perverted jokes and this inappropriate context because they didn't want to be seen as killing the vibe in the room for Dan. Dan started yelling more. His mood would fluctuate. He ends up firing Christy. He wanted Jenny to come back, but she had to work for free for like 3 months. She ended up doing it, but then Dan pulls her in and asks her if she ever did a phone sex job, and then she quits. She sues Dan for gender discrimination. They settled the case, but it ended Jenny's career. Dan kept doing great things. He was still the golden boy at Nickelodeon. And the argument is that if the adults are being treated this way, then how are these girls being treated? But again, no smoking gun yet about Dan messing with kids overtly. Now, in the part two where I come back next time, we're going to talk about some of the conspiracies and allegations that are a little more seedy that, for whatever reason, aren't on the documentary. I thought, man, you should have put these on there. These are more condemning than the stuff you're talking about. Like, you've convinced me that Dan Schneider is a terrible human being, but you have not convinced me that he sexually assaults children. Those are two different things in my book. He's inappropriate. He has terrible morality. He's a terrible supervisor and a terrible leader. And he is a sexist, it seems, according to my opinion of what I've seen on this documentary. We're already on to part two. We're introduced to MJ. There was this girl named Brandy who was a Nickelodeon, and MJ is her mom. I don't know where Brandy is, but they interviewed her mom. And the mom wanted Brandy to live out her fantasies of being in Hollywood growing up, because MJ's mom was in Hollywood, and MJ's mom was like, you're not getting into this industry, because she probably knows how terrible it is. So what does MJ do? She says, I'm gonna have my kid go in there. I'm like, oh my God, what are these parents doing? So Brandy wanted to be on Nickelodeon. She gets it. She starts emailing, and I don't know how Brandy is at the time. She, I don't know, 10? I have no idea. She starts emailing a guy on the set named Jason. He was a production assistant, I think. And the mom was still like, okay, that's cool. Email with this grown-ass man. And Brandy ends up getting an email of a photo of Jason naked and masturbating. She tells her mom. MJ ends up not calling the police on this guy because she's worried she'll look like a bad parent, which ironically is how she looks on this documentary. But she ends up pulling her out of Hollywood, which is great for her. Good. I mean, I'm glad she was able to do the right thing in the end. But what about all the other kids? You just let them burn? And look, I don't have kids, and I haven't been in this situation. It's easy to sit here on the sidelines and say, oh yeah, you should have done this. So, you know, I got sympathy for her. I'm not trying to shit on the poor woman. But again, if you listen to our, if you listen to my very controversial show I do with my wife called Breaking Social Norms, we talk about this, right? I think the solution is for parents to be more proactive on this. And if that's the takeaway I get from this whole documentary, but that's not what the denouement doesn't end with. And we think parents should be more responsible. They're more like, no, we need to have the government instill laws for Nickelodeon. It's like, they already have laws. The parents abandon these kids. They already have laws. The parents are supposed to be on the set, and half the time they don't do it. I'm like, so what's the point here? Either we stop having kids work in Hollywood, which is probably the right answer, or you tell the parents, like, you need to do a better job at watching over your kids and making sure they're not getting messed with like this. If your child is emailing with an adult person, maybe you should be a little concerned. Maybe read every single email that comes through. You know, it's kind of wild to me. I put my libertarian hat on for that kind of thing. Like, at some point, you got to have personal responsibility on some level. No, it's not okay Nickelodeon's doing this. Of course, you should incriminate all these crooks and perverts. But I think a great way to make sure it doesn't happen anymore is for the parents to understand it. And that's what, you know. Anyways, Amanda Bynes, she's now 16 years old. She's doing another show with Dan. This one's for teenagers called What I Like About You. And Dan eventually gets pushed out of the writer's room. Dan claims he left on his own to do other things. Amanda starts beefing with her parents. She runs away from home, and she goes to Dan Schneider for help. And they cook up a plan to get her emancipated from her parents so she can be free to do whatever she wants. The plan fails. But now Dan's relationship with Amanda is over. Now, what I've read in the seedy, shady blog rooms of allegations, I don't even want to say it yet, but it's in part two. We're going to talk about there's theories and allegations that Dan actually impregnated some of these girls. I don't know. It's pretty wild. So anyways, Dan heads back to Nickelodeon at this point, and we're getting more of the same. These scenes where these kids are way too focused on Dan Schneider being God to them, again, with the weird power imbalance. Because, again, it's because Dan is a nerd. He is a nerd with nerd anger. Those are genuine feelings he feels. He feels a superiority over these children, which is insane, right? That's why he's a terrible person, I think, according to what I see on the documentary. But take a listen to what he says.
What makes it really fun for me working with young people is that it's fresh and new to them. This is often their first or second job. Fame is new, the whole process is new, and they're excited to be a part of it.
Dan was the writer and the executive producer on all that, and he was the primary person in charge on set. There is a deference on a television set. It's very hierarchical. Dan is someone who holds economic power and emotional power over these kids. He had so much power. And he threw it around. I grew up watching all that, and I remember the way they talked about Dan.
It's the Dan phone!
There's a very telling scene where Dan calls the cast, and it's like Charlie calling his angels.
Hello, cast!
Hi, Dan!
He's parodying himself as a big shot producer.
We lost him.
Lost him.
How about a shrimp?
Okay.
He's being hand-fed shrimp tails, and then the kids are literally referring to him as God.
Yeah. Well, it's not our place to question them.
Yeah, Dan's a god.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't argue that.
To me, it looks like a moment that really reflects what's happening behind the scenes.
Let's go make Dan proud. Come on.
I was so excited.
And the documentary presents it and says, look, the argument here is that Dan not only has the emotional power over these children, he has economic power over these children because he can make them literal stars with fame and fortune. He's a kingmaker, they say. And they say that's how TV sets work. It's very hierarchical. There's gatekeepers, which is what I think this Brian Peck guy tapped into, some gatekeeper to tell the gatekeeper, hey, I need you to get some of these celebrities rounded up to defend me in court. We'll come to that in a second. They interview more of these kids who were on a show called All That. This guy, Brian Christopher Hearn, said how Dan was nicer. He was a African American guy. Dan was nicer to the white kids. They made him sell Girl Scout cookies like he was a drug dealer, and they made him wear this bodysuit and called him Lil Fetus. And they talked about how the suit should have been charcoal, which, you know, he was a light skinned guy, and obviously it's very racist to say that, you know, black is charcoal. But his mom starts complaining, and plot spoiler, eventually they kick him off the set because his mom was too much of an issue. But then the bummer is at the end of the thing, by the end of part four, he's kind of like mad at his mom. He's like, I wish she wouldn't have gotten me kicked off. It's like, bro, she saved you. What are you talking about? Did you see all these molesters around? Anyway, they go on. These kids are talking about how some of these sketches were way too difficult. They use an example of this sugar and cream skit where they had to chug sugar. There's this show. They do a fear factor for kids called On Air Dare, where the one guy had to coat himself in peanut butter with dogs licking them. And he even said, he said, this feels like it's an awkward fantasy for some freaky dudes. But again, when I'm looking at it from the mind of a child, I think, I don't know, if I was a kid, I'd probably think that was funny, right? I don't know. My mind doesn't immediately go to that. But I get it. When you present it to me like this, I say, oh, okay, yeah, I could see that, yeah. I mean, peanut butter with the dogs, that's like an old trope. So I get it. And these are questionable jokes that I think, God, isn't there anyone Nickelodeon in charge of being the person who says, look, this is too close to a perverted joke, get it out of here? And that's what Dan Schneider's defense the whole time is like, hey, man, they all reviewed these jokes. It wasn't just me. I don't know. You're all a bunch of weirdos, dude. But the On Air Dare, it was a lot of adult context. And again, I don't understand the decisions made here, because the Fear Factor was a huge show in the 2000s. Our Lord and Savior Joe Rogan was, I'm just kidding. Joe Rogan was the host. And I watched Fear Factor. But it's wild. I mean, they had these kids putting scorpions in their mouth. I was like, bro, what are they doing to these kids? Anyways, Dan, he's getting abusive. He's yelling, unhealthy atmospheres on the set. He's making degrading comments, making people work excessive hours. And they say he was a total egomaniac. Whatever. Then they introduce Jason Handy, a goofy white boy from Nebraska, as Giovanni puts it, which I didn't like. I thought, man, are we allowed to say that? Are we allowed to call someone a goofy white boy? I don't know. Like, it's fine. I'm okay with it. But I also think, like, man, I don't know. Like, there's going to be some white guys out there that would say, hey, that's racist. It's a questionable comment is all I'm saying. It's whatever, right? And look, I'm not fragile about it. And you know what? I think we talked about this on Breaking Social Norms. Listen to that if you want the full soapbox about why I think that was probably not a cool thing to say. Now, he was a production assistant, very friendly with the kids, of course. And in 2003, they searched his home, tons of images and child videos and all this stuff. And this creeper dude, he had Ziplocs with tokens in the bags from these girls. Like, I don't even want to say it, like a 7-year-old's underwear in this Ziploc. And I here's where the documentary let me down again. My question is, was this guy keeping these for himself? Probably. That's the implication. Or was he involved in a ring of folks who, I don't know, were buying this stuff from him? Was he selling these videos and these tokens? Because that's where my mind goes. I think, why would he, like, sure, maybe he has all this stuff because he's into that. But was he selling it? Was he part of a larger ring of folks? I don't know. Wasn't that in the movie Fresh? Remember we talked about the movie Fresh, the cannibalistic movie? It was on Hulu. I think that dude had a bunch of tokens and Ziplocs as well. Is this like a Hollywood thing? I don't know. But he had all these journals self-implicating himself about, I mean, they read from the journals and you're like, bro, this is terrible. About messing with these young girls and promising them he can get them onto shows. And after all this, he gets 6 years. I said, 6 years, that's it? probably got out in two for good behavior or something. I was like, bro, how the hell? This guy's caught red-handed. Anyway, they immediately move over to Brian Peck because he gets arrested just a few months after this Jason Handy guy. He had worked with Dan Schneider for a long time. He played this character named Pickle Boy. And again, they show a lot of jokes and they say, look, these pickles are dick jokes. The worst one I saw was there was a hole in the wall, like a glory hole, and he hands a pickle to Ray Romano. I don't know. Are pickles funny to kids? It can go either way, honestly. Anyway, the idea of Pickle Boy came from Dan. So again, this is the idea that he's the perv here. But everyone loved and trusted this Brian Peck guy. And he had artwork in his house from John Wayne Gacy. A painting of him as the clown. John Wayne Gacy. You know, the guy who was like murdering all his kids. And I think he was homosexual. I don't remember. Not that that matters. But he would kill boys and men and stuff them into his crawl space. But he had, apparently Brian Peck was pen pals with this guy. Now, you could buy this stuff online. I remember, because I've always been intrigued by murderabilia. As you guys know, my father was very intrigued by the Charles Manson story, but my dad was, you know, a stand-up. He was a red-blooded patriot, law enforcement, all that stuff. And when he died, I got a lot of this Charles Manson stuff. I got Charles Manson's hair, but I'm not a weirdo, not that I know of. But yeah, a lot of people collect this kind of stuff. So look, I'm not saying like Brian Peck's a good guy. I'm just saying like they throw in a lot of questionable things, and I'm like, yeah, but that's not the thing that makes him bad. Okay. I mean, is it cool that he's pen pals with John Wayne Gacy? No, that's kind of weird, right? My dad wasn't pen pals with Charles Manson, for what it's worth, by the way. He just had some of his stuff. but anyways, I just think, you know, murderabilia is a huge industry. And you could buy, I remember seeing John Wayne Gacy paintings he was selling online. But I'm just like, that's my problem with the documentaries. Like, they start lumping in everything. And I'm like, well, I got to cherry pick and be like, I don't think there's a problem with that, but I do have a problem with this kind of thing. So Brian Peck gets arrested. 11 charges of child sexual assault-ish things. Alleged. I don't want to say the term. I'm trying to keep myself out of hot water here. He said he got arrested on 11 charges of things against one particular child actor. And turns out it's Drake Bell. And Dan Schneider, in the one scene, he pulls all the parents out of the room and asks all the kids if anyone else has been messed with by Brian Peck. And I'm like, if I'm a parent, I'm like, bro, you ain't talking to my kids all alone. Or if you're going to, you have to tell me what you're going to tell. I don't know. Again, easy to talk from the sidelines. And plus, I don't have kids. So now we're on to part three. 2004, a show called Drake and Josh, starring Drake Bell. Drake Bell was in Jerry Maguire with Tommy. Tommy Crew is my second favorite actor. Also a strange guy. Didn't Dave Chappelle say we've got some imperfect heroes? Wasn't that something he said once? So Brian Peck comes on set, makes friends with Drake Bell. And he had previously been an acting coach for Leo DiCaprio, my number one. Again, another weird guy. And starts coaching Drake Bell, voice coaching or acting coaching or whatever. But the dad was suspicious the whole time. He was on the money with the whole thing. The whole time he said, bro, I don't trust this guy at all. Dad saw Brian put his arm around Drake's waist and touch him and saw old clips of Brian doing this to Leo DiCaprio. And dad was like, no, dude. I'm like, good. That's what you're supposed to do. Good parent, right? I get to judge your parenting skills when I don't know what it's like. Good job. So dad goes to production, says, hey, this Brian Peck guy, he's a little handsy with my kid. They're like, oh, back off. He's just gay. It's fine. And dad's like, okay. And then he starts telling other people on set. And he claims that he gets ostracized and everyone, and he forces him to back off from the whole thing. Then for whatever reason, Drake Bell, I think he lives with his mom now. Brian Peck is grooming the heck out of this kid, taking him to Disneyland, going to see this kid play in a band. And, you know, Brian is moving in and trying to take over this kid's life. Well, mom, I'm like, where's mom? Dad's concerned. Where's mom? Mom lets Brian Peck pick this kid up and take him to work and take him to Disneyland. I'm like, even though dad told her not to ever let this happen, she proceeds to do it. And sure enough, Drake Bell wakes up and Brian is assaulting him. Brian starts apologizing, but then kept luring Drake back to his home. Drake says this wasn't just a one-time oopsie thing. And the only reason any of it stopped was because Drake Bell was at his girlfriend's house. And Brian Peck, this grown-ass man, is blowing up this kid's phone to take him to Disney. And the girlfriend's mom, again, great parent skills, says, what the hell? What is this grown man doing blowing your phone up, dude? And she calls Drake's mom and says, I'm taking his ass to therapy. Something's happening here. And mom, I don't know what she's doing, checked out. But even with that, Drake still doesn't tell the truth yet. The only reason it comes to an end is because Brian Peck was being really weird and was trying to be Drake's dad on the show. Drake, that's the thing that triggered him. He calls his mom, finally breaks down and tells her what happened. They call the cops. Brian gets arrested. Dan calls Drake, and this is what Drake tells us, that Dan Schneider, this monster from part one, calls him and says, ask him if Brian Peck did all this stuff. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, do you need anything from me? And he says, Dan Schneider was the only person that seemed like he was there for him. And again, we're left to our own thoughts here. And at first, the first time I watched this whole stupid thing twice. Not stupid, this whole dirty, I don't like watching this stuff, but I watched it twice. The first time I watched it, I thought, oh, well, Dan Schneider's an okay guy. I mean, at least he's trying to help this kid out. I respect that. But then the second time I watched it, I thought, oh, I think what they're implying is that Dan wanted to keep Drake real close because he was buddies with Brian to make sure he didn't, I don't know, talk more, or maybe he was going to try to get in there. I don't know. Doesn't specifically tell. So Drake Bell calls his dad, tells him about the arrest, but doesn't tell him that it's him that got assaulted. And it remained a mystery for years, apparently, until this documentary. And then Drake Bell has this destructive lifestyle, drugs, alcohol, goes to prison. I'm sorry, not him. Brian Peck ends up getting convicted. He goes to prison. But when he gets out, he goes right back to Nickelodeon, which is wild. That's absurd. That should never happen in a million years. And then we get on to part four. And this is the last part. Brian Peck gets sentenced in 2004. And his side of the courtroom is full of celebrities endorsing and talking about how great of a guy he was and how he was the victim in all this. Take a listen.
Back then, it was a different time. So I think it was a little easier to go to and from a courthouse and not worry about Twitter that night or TMZ paparazzis being there. On the day of sentencing for Brian, I get to the courthouse. It was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever seen. His entire side of the courtroom was full. Full. There were definitely some recognizable faces on that side of the room. And my side was me, my mom, and my brother. Brian had been convicted, but getting all of this support from a lot of people in the industry, and yeah, I was pretty shocked. My mom got up, she had a statement. I wasn't going to address Brian. There was no reason to. I addressed my statement to everyone in the room. I looked at all of them. And I just said, how dare you? And I said, you will forever have the memory of sitting in this courtroom and defending this person. And I will forever have the memory of the person you're defending violating me. and doing unspeakable acts and crimes. And that's what I'll remember.
So again, and this is a conversation I had with Josie on Breaking Social Norms. The bigger question that I want to know, why? Why do all these people care about a dialogue coach, a nobody actor? You know what I mean? I think it was because this guy, Brian Peck, was plugged into some larger ring of folks, kind of like Epstein, kind of like Sandusky. And I'm going to guess there's some blackmail videos or some favors owed somewhere for gatekeeping. Because why would all these actors, James Marsden, Kimmy Robertson, oh, we're going to come back to that. Breaks my heart. Why would they risk their reputation for a guy, for a guy who was now convicted? It wasn't even he was fighting for his innocence. It's like, no, he was convicted. It's insane. And I thought, man, Leonardo DiCaprio didn't write a letter. What's up with that? Anyways, he pleads no contest to two charges of child abuse, 16 months in jail, and now he's, you know, on the list. And let's see here. So So after all these years, they had 41 letters kept under seal, and they unlocked the letters. Apparently, they didn't know exactly who they were, I guess, until this documentary. Of all these sort of sympathizers for Brian Peck, this guy who pled no contest to two charges of child abuse, the guy that Drake Bell says was sexually assaulting him as a child.
Okay.
James Marsden, he was the guy on Westworld, the main sort of protagonist. Taryn Killam, Alan Thicke from Growing Pains, Ron Melendez, Ryder Strong, Will Friedle, those are guys from Boy Meets World, apparently. Again, I'm too old for those things. I don't know what a Boy Meets World means. Joanna Kearns, also from Growing Pains, who later retracted it. She says something to the effect on the screen they show, something to the effect of how she was misled to support this guy. She didn't know all the details or something like that. And then Rich and Beth Correll, who would then hire Brian Peck after the prison sentence to work on Disney's Cody and Zach. They said they had nothing to do with it. Oh, boy. I mean, it's wild. But Kimmy Robertson, that's the one I want to talk about. She plays Lucy on Twin Peaks, our beloved Twin Peaks. Can you believe it? Twin Peaks is on the news now, associated with this. Well, I don't know if it's on the news. No one's really talking about it, but I said, what? And the documentary claims that something about how, like, she said something about Brian Peck being pressured into messing with the Drake Bell. I'm like, bro, you can't, he's an adult, adult and a kid. You can't have that. Doesn't exist, right? Now, this proves to you, my dear listeners, that I am only looking to talk about facts. And I will tell you when opinion meets fact on this podcast, because trust me, it broke my heart to see her name show up on this list. In fact, there's part of me that wants to hear out Kimmy's side of things. That's how much I love Twin Peaks, because I want to be like, I wonder what her side of the story is. Kind of. I mean, it's kind of inexcusable. I don't know. I went to her Instagram, and I don't know if she realized it, but people were blowing up her comments. People are real mad at her. Rightfully so. But again, it's, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it. It's upsetting. It's very terrible. But again, like I always say, you got to separate the art from the artist. That doesn't mean I can't enjoy Twin Peaks. That doesn't mean I can't love the character of Lucy on Twin Peaks. You know? Right? Or am I wrong for thinking that? I don't know. It's a hot take, controversial take. It's like R. Kelly, you know? He did horrible things to kids. I still, every now and then, man, like I sing the bump and grind song. I don't know. It's hard. It's a tough world we live in. You gotta find forgiveness in your heart. Let people find their path to Christ. Hopefully, if that's your religion you want to believe in, I don't know. I think the afterlife will have judges of their own. That doesn't excuse any of these people's bad behavior, though. So Nickelodeon hires another predator, Azelle Channel, who also had a record. Not looking good for Nickelodeon. And amongst all of this, Nickelodeon just keeps getting bigger. In the 2000s, they had this Victorious show. Jamie Lynn Spears is on there. Ariana Grande, iCarly. I've heard of all these things. I couldn't tell you. Never seen an episode. Then we go back to Dan Schneider and about how he's a control freak. Everyone's got to dance on eggshells around him. And now they start saying he was sexualizing girls. I'm like, okay, here we go. Jeez, thank you. Like, if we're going to condemn this guy as a pedo, like, I need to see more evidence. They're saying he would sexualize these girls, and they play some jokes. Like, the one girl talks about being on the wood, and she's like, I want to be on the wood. I'm like, okay. I mean, it's out of context. I can't really tell. Seems inappropriate. They have girls holding the shake weights sideways, like the Donald Trump dance. You know what I mean? They've got this, I don't know. They show girls in bikinis and they're like, these are nubile. Sexuality is part of these shows. Okay. I don't know. This gets into a weird place because I think some of these shows are geared towards teenagers. And again, not to keep referencing or breaking social norms, but that's where we get into more opinionated, free flowing conversation over there that, you know, I was interested in sexuality young. It was between the ages of 5th and 6th grade, 11 and 12, whatever age that is. And I'm not saying that, oh yeah, like, let's just sexualize kids that are 12. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying, like, man, I was watching Baywatch, watching, in quotes, Baywatch when I was like 13 or 14 or something like that. So, I mean, young, and look, no, they shouldn't have any sexuality on the TV. No. But I'm saying is that girls who are 15, 16, what they do wear bikinis, right? So that's my thing. Is like, I don't know where we draw the line of saying, okay, children's programming can't have these elements within them. It's a dicey line. I don't know. It's tough. Again, they go back to this idea that they're shooting goo on Jamie Lynn Spears' face. And at the time when I'm watching, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, anything gooey on the face, they're trying to tell me that this is perverted cum shots. And I'm still thinking, yeah, but if I'm a kid, I'm not thinking that, you know? But then they say that behind the scenes, the boys, they don't name specific names, but the boys behind the scenes said it was a cum shot. And she said, Dan's laughing about that. So that seems pretty definitive that was pretty upsetting, right? Lots of sexual innuendos. They zoom in on like people's tongues licking, goo splattering and stuff. I think you'd have to kind of watch this in context to sort of make an informed opinion about it. I don't know. Seems dicey to me, especially given, I mean, the bigger indictment is all these pedos that they're hiring and hiring back on. I'm like, bro, this is like, you're endangering kids' lives. What are we doing here? Then they play a bunch of extras from Ariana Grande's Victorious show of her putting tomatoes in a bra, her putting her feet in her mouth, water on her face, juicing the potato. And they describe it best. They call it morally murky scenes, which I'm like, yes, that is a very good description. Morally murky. Then they're talking about these back massages Dan keeps getting. That's sexual harassment. Of course he shouldn't do that. 2014, Dan wins a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Nick Kids Award. This one female actor, Jeanette McMurdy, didn't show up. She would later write a memoir where she would talk about Dan. She would just call him an unnamed creator, about how this guy was abusive. One example that gives, her mom died, and the next week Nickelodeon like gets her back on the set. Let's see. 2017, things start changing over. Now we got Me Too movement. It kicks off. And then you get all these anonymous reports about Dan's massage obsession, because now people are looking twice at this stuff and saying, that's inappropriate, buddy. Nickelodeon parts ways, claiming he needs to work on his life and take some time off. Nickelodeon allegedly paid him $7 million to leave. And the belief is that there was evidence of being abusive in the workplace, not sexually related, is what they clarified as. And again, this goes back to my comment earlier about, like I said, some of this woke stuff, I'm okay with. The PC stuff, I'm cool with it. And for people who think like, oh, the Me Too is a bunch of liberal BS or whatever. Well, I mean, it got this guy fired and he seemed like a monster. So it's not that bad, is it? Right? Kids, they all experience different traumas and they talk about it, about being let go. They describe it as bittersweet. They talk about the struggles of beauty standards and not feeling accepted and having all these self-esteem issues. But then I think, like, didn't we all go through that during puberty? Didn't we all come out of that thing kind of beat up? I hated high school. Like, I look back and I think, those were not my favorite years as a teenager and adolescent. Like, those were tough years. So I don't know if that's a Hollywood specific thing. I bet it's amplified though, right? Drake Bell files for bankruptcy. He's got some DUIs, child endangerment. He sent some inappropriate text to a minor apparently or something. It goes through all these other kids, actors who are a mess. Amanda Bynes, Aaron Carter, who we talked about on this show because he died in a bathtub. Britney Spears, the Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, Lindsay Lohan, Drew Barrymore. And then they wrap it all up. They say, we need laws to protect these kids because just having a parent around isn't enough. And I think, okay, I'm okay with that. But I also think that we need to, I compare this to health, okay? No one's going to care about your health more than you. You can't rely on the doctor, the big pharma system, to be the sole feedback. You've got to kind of be in control of things. That's the way I would look at it with a child, you know? It's like my dog. I call the vet and I'm asking questions and I'm looking it up and I'm questioning if the vet is right. Same with my doctor, you know, and those kinds of things. They ask all these kid actors about it and they all are kind of torn on it, you know, which is very interesting that some of these guys would be horrifically abused. Even Drake Bell, sexually assaulted, is kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of bittersweet. Like, oh man, Hollywood, that fame is a drug, man. It's wild. So then Dan Schneider, he replies to these videos with, I mean, it's wild. There's an interview on his YouTube channel where he has this guy, this actor, Tebow from iCarly. Again, no clue. And Tebow's interviewing Dan about this documentary. And it's a total fluff piece. The comments are turned off. There's not even advertisements on it, which I'm like, whoa, this guy means business, right? And, right off the bat, Tebow's like, all right, Dan, first off, I want to see how, yeah, I'm checking in with you. How you doing, Dan? I'm like, bro, this guy just got basically proven to be a monster. No one cares how Dan Schneider is doing. He probably would have been better off not doing anything, but he did. He admits wrongdoing about the massages. He says he's embarrassed and he apologizes, which I kind of, look, I understand that the older generation, they grew up in a different work environment. It doesn't make it okay by any stretch. I'm good with him apologizing and embarrassing. Feeling embarrassed, you know, it's like when the older generation, you know, your parents or your grandparents, if they use some of the more morally murky terms, it's like, yeah, I don't know. You got to give them a little bit of leeway. Like, it's not cool to use some of the terms they use, but anyway, they talk about the writer's room. Dan apologizes about how these writers shouldn't have been around all these inappropriate jokes. And it hurts him because he wishes he hadn't taken it so far. I'm like, yeah, right. And I'm going to play a clip from you. Listen to how these questions are framed to tell you this is a total fluff piece.
I wish you'd had a better time, and I wish I could have shown you a better experience.
Yeah. Now, you've written hundreds of episodes. Thousands of jokes have been told.
Yeah.
But currently, where we are, some people think that some of those jokes are inappropriate for children.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
All these jokes that you're speaking of, that the show covered over the past two nights, every one of those jokes was written for a kid audience because kids thought they were funny, mm-hmm. and only funny, okay? Now, we have some adults looking back at them 20 years later through their lens, and they're looking at them and they're saying, oh, you know, I don't think that's appropriate for a kid's show. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with that. If that's how anyone feels, let's cut those jokes out of the show, just like I would have done 20 years ago or 25 years ago. I cut it. I want my shows to be popular. I want everyone to like, the more people who like the shows, the happier I am.
Yeah.
So if there's anything in a show that needs to be cut because it's upsetting somebody, let's cut it.
So I think it's big for you to say with your work,
mm-hmm.
if it's viewed as that today, you don't have a problem.
Cut it. Cut it.
I mean, that's a solution.
The last thing I want to ever do
yeah.
is put any content in a show that's going to upset my audience and make them want to turn off the TV. Why would I ever want to do that?
That makes sense.
Tebow's like, now, Dan, you've built 2 decades of successful show. You've written thousands and thousands of great jokes. Some people think those jokes are inappropriate. It's like he's trying to say, look, there's a million jokes, and of course one or two are going to go astray. Come on, dude. And Dan Schneider, he says, he pins the blame. He's like, look, every one of those jokes was written for kids, and you've got adults looking at it. And 20 years later, they think it's inappropriate. And now all of a sudden, Dan's a great guy. He says, let's just cut it out. I think we should take him out of the show. But yeah, Tebow, he's a big old bootlicker there. I think it's so big of you to offer that up, Dan. You're a real champ. I'm like, bro, this guy was a scumbag. What are you doing? But they dismiss it, saying about how the jokes get approved by dozens and dozens of adults higher up, which might be the case. That might be true. He admits that the on-the-air dares went too far. You know, that's the Fear Factor jokes. Tebow, every question is crazy. Tebow says, I know you've got nothing to do with salaries, but tell me about the two women having to share a salary. Oh, wow, Tebow, great. Dan, and this is where Dan says, well, that's common practice in Hollywood. I don't know if that's true or not. It seems jacked up if that's the case, because there's plenty of money going around in Hollywood you could pay your writers. Tebow asks about the black actors feeling tones of racism, and Dan says, look, I've always had black actors, and I celebrate diversity. Oh, and then Tebow, he lobs that one up, too. I know you're very interested in diversity, Dan. Tell me about... Come on. Then Amanda Bynes, Emancipation, he does... He says, well, I mean, I was on a part of a team to support that, as I would any of my, you know, whatever... Okay. But, and Dan says he was baffled by the support of Brian Peck, gives a nice sob scene and a nice cry, end scene, and that's the wrap for the Dan Schneider rebuttal. So, in conclusion, I think that this documentary is very much needed. I think parents particularly need to understand if their kids are going to get into Hollywood that you better keep them on a very short leash and keep an eye on them because there are predators. But there's predators everywhere. It's not just Hollywood. It's in all walks of life, you know? I mean, how big of a scandal is the church? You know, and I'm a Christian warrior. That doesn't mean the whole church is bad, but that doesn't mean there's bad actors. But you got to be careful. I hate to say it, like, that's the world we live in. You know, my father was... If I slept over at a friend's house, my dad would go over to that friend's house and meet the parents every time. He would make sure, like, everything was on the up and up. Because that's what a parent does. You got to, you know, and I don't know if every... I think some people grow up in this world and they trust people, and that's nice. I like that. I don't want to... I'm a paranoid guy, and I think my dad was probably a paranoid guy too, but sometimes you need that for protection, you know? It's tough. I don't want to live in a world where I don't trust anybody, but I'm also the kind of guy that locks my doors. Some people, I live in a small town. We're the kind of place that keeps our front door unlocked. Like, hell no, that's not me. I'm strapped with guns. I locked down. I got cameras. I got alarms. You know, it's like a doomsday prepper over here. But different worldviews. So I don't want to paint a broad brush with a broad stroke, whatever that saying is, for some of these parents. It's a tough deal, right? But yes, there are some inappropriate actors in Hollywood, much like any job. You got all these things happening in all kinds of jobs. But of course, you know, this is the podcast where we talk about pop culture entertainment. So this is right up the alley of conspiracy. So, and with that note, I need you to subscribe to my podcast because we're coming back with part 2. When? I don't know. Probably next week. I got to do some more research. but we're going to cover some deeper allegations and deeper conspiracies not covered on the documentary series. We're going to talk about Dan Schneider's wife, who's also a celebrity. We're going to talk about Amanda Bynes' secret Twitter account with claims she made about John Travolta, Dan Schneider, allegedly impregnating a couple girls, allegedly. Robert Downey Jr. is on this. Robert Downey Jr. is supposedly like a hero. I don't know. We'll see. Ariana Grande. I'll talk about her Kabbalah roots and a video where she's trying to pull her teeth out that I had blogged about in 2014. Nickelodeon's other child marriage. They didn't even talk about all the other Nickelodeon perverts. Ren and Stimpy, one of my favorite shows growing up. I didn't know this until I watched this documentary and started researching. One of the creators is married. He married a underage girl. Says some creepy stuff too. Liz Gillies from Victorious. I mean, there's a bunch on here, man. So stay subscribed to the show for part two. Thank you for listening. And until next time, stay positive.